Whether it's her first Mother's Day or her 40th, she deserves more. Shop tons of stunning on-trend jewelry for every budget at Diamonds Direct. Diamond fashion jewelry, beautiful birthstones, everyday pearls, starting at just $200. Commemorate the real loves of her life with a gorgeous pendant featuring the birthstone of the one who made her mom. This Mother's Day, Diamonds Direct has everything you need to say thank you. Diamonds Direct, your love, our passion. Online at DiamondsDirect.com.
Zeit Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama, a new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hello, the internet, and welcome to season 139, episode 5 of Der Daily Zeitgeist, a production of iHeartRadio. This is a podcast where we take a deep dive into America's shared consciousness and say officially off the top, fuck the Koch brothers, fuck Fox News, fuck Rush Limbaugh, fuck Buck Sexton, fuck Sean Hannity, fuck J.K. Rowling. Fuck, and now that we've got that out of the way, it's Friday, June 26th, 2020. My name is Jack O'Brien, a.k.a. Jack O'Thien, and I'm thrilled to be joined, as always, by my co-host, Mr. Miles Gray!
Then I saw her face, bah, 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 bah. I couldn't believe it, bah, bah, bah. Was another case, bah, 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 bah. No mask inside, bah, bah, bah. Oh, I need drugs, woo. I need some relief here. I can't believe Karen's all that wild. Okay, so there was a lot of controversy with this AKA. Crispy Meme Donut, a.k.a. Christy Yamaguchi Main, who submits many AKAs, put this and said to the tune of, I'm a Believer by Smash Mouth. Now, many people hopped in the replies and called out this monkey's erasure. And I understand. I totally get that. A shout out to everybody who came to the defense of the monkeys. But yes, I had to honor the Smash Mouth version. There we go.
Mouse. Well, we are thrilled to be joined in our third seat by the hilarious and talented Kevin T. Porter.
Hello, I'm here. We're doing it. It's all good, and the world is getting better and better every day, isn't it?
Every day, I think.
It depends on how you look at it. You can always find good, and you can always find bad.
There's always little, as John Krasinski has taught us recently, there's always some good news.
Yeah. Right.
Like, we always need a little smile, and we can find that every day if we look hard enough.
Do we know the origin story of it yet? Like, aside from the press release boilerplate version of he just felt like it was, the world really could use some good news right now, and that's why we're calling it that. But I feel like it was the most cynical thing where it's like, okay, you know what would fucking kill right now is if we do some janky From My Kitchen show where it looks like a dad telling you about the good of the world. They're going to eat that shit up, and then we'll fucking sell off the IP, baby.
Yeah.
You know how Krasinski do?
No, I believe if someone were to write an oral history of SGN, it would be 30 words long, and it would be John Krasinski's agent saying, I thought it'd be a good play, and we could probably sell the IP.
Okay.
And that would be the oral history. Also, with John, unfortunately, and I hate to, you know, listen, has call out and cancel culture gone too far? It's a question we ask ourselves every day.
Every
but
moment.
With John, he is not, he's not that. That's the whole image of that stuff. I have friends that worked post on A Quiet Place. He yelled at editors, he threw stuff, he's mean. He's not a dad that wants to throw a prom for teenagers. He's just
the
run-of-the-mill Hollywood jerk. Yes.
You're talking about Zinsk?
Unfortunately, we may be looking at an Ellen situation, folks.
Uh-oh. Wow.
Where things are not as they appear.
Oh, that was my favorite. I remember like fucking 15 years ago. No, maybe 12 years ago, to be fair, was the first time I had heard someone who had survived that show and was like, no, man, you gotta... No. And like, I remember someone I went to high school with dated the former DJ, like one of the guys who was one of the DJs. And
the pre-Twitch, yes.
That dude was like, oh my God, dude. He's like, nah, it's not a chill place.
It is,
and Kevin,
yeah.
You had a very popular Twitter thread where you were just like, hey,
yeah.
I'm bored. Why don't people share with me some that Ellen was, horror stories?
That was like 2 or 3 weeks into quarantine, and that felt like, yeah. Well, this could be my King Lear. Yeah. Dethroning and defunding Ellen, the Ellen
yeah.
show.
Yeah. Well done.
And yeah, I was happy with the validation of that.
What
right?
was the wildest story that you got in reply to that call?
Well, they turned into, like, it got pretty jokey, like, the bigger
right.
it got, and people were like, she threw water on my papers, like, stuff that obviously didn't happen. But the nail polish thing, in which the waitress to whom that actually did happen logged on and was replying, and she's a comedian herself, where Ellen went out to a restaurant, and then because this waitress's nail polish was chipped, she called the restaurant the next day to try to get the employee fired. From the job, that was probably one of the most egregious ones.
Holy
I would say.
Shit.
And then there were like plenty more in DMs of like people saying, my wife used to work on the show and here's what she said. It's like, well, I can't do anything with that. Like,
I'm
happy to hear your confession, but it's not gonna, I don't know how productive it'll be.
We're transmitting from the air ducts in the studio. Send
yeah,
help.
Exactly.
We were actually talking on yesterday's episode about Tina Fey, and I noticed that you were kind of responding to her attempting to get 30 Rock out of jail, saying that you thought this had more to do with, you know, her reputation management than it did any sort of sensitivity.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Especially, and this is like, unfortunately, like a weird trend now of late night comedy people apologizing for their use of blackface from the last 20 mm-hmm. or so years, mm-hmm. or sometimes like the last 10. And then, which begets a wave of white people realizing that maybe it's kind of weird if they voice black people in animated shows. But I think in all those cases, it's like, okay, there's definitely like corporate interest in play, and maybe there is like legitimate change of heart, whatever. You never know what a person's
yeah.
going through. With Tina Fey specifically, her history on late race as it stands currently would. I think beg to differ as far as like her current statements go. Like there is definitely a cognitive dissonance with that. And even like a episode of Kimmy Schmidt from a couple years ago,
right,
which was meant to lambast anyone who would ever criticize someone making art for being racially insensitive, in which Asian American protesters vanish into smoke by being offended too much. That doesn't strike
right.
me as the same woman that would say, you know, I really care about kids not seeing blackface, and it would just really hurt my heart
right.
if they were offended yeah. by that. There's one that says, I'm not in the apology business. I'm opting out of that. So my
yeah.
thing with her is like, that's fine. Continue opting out of it. Like, I don't need you to be my progressive savior. I don't
right.
want Seinfeld to go back into Seinfeld and CGI black girlfriends where there were none. Just be like old and problematic, but don't pretend like
that you weren't doing that. Yeah.
Yes.
You can just be like, yeah, that look, honestly, I'm off that shit and that sucks. But that's the record of my evolution, I guess, is there.
I don't. Yeah.
Seinfeld is my favorite example because he confused his, like, you know, getting so rich that he wasn't funny anymore and like couldn't relate to human beings anymore with being rejected by progressive culture. Right. And it was just like extra embarrassing.
Yeah. There's just a certain tax bracket after which your brain just stops evolving. It would appear.
Yeah.
And like, and I'm sure there are people where it's like they make valiant efforts to do something different. But yeah. It feels like there is like an intersection of like this age and this much money. And it's just like, farewell. Like, we'll try again with the next generation.
Right. You're like, I lost grip of the balloon. Yep. There it goes. Yeah. It's floating away. It all right. Never mind.
But with the streaming stuff bugs me though, because it's like, All right, well, now no one will ever need to hold Tina Fey to account for all that stuff.
Right.
Because it'll just like, 10 years from now, when someone is actually watching 30 Rock for the first time, they'll just like never know about it. And she gets a get out of jail free card for that.
And I'll look like a creep, like I'm at a coffee shop, like a Tina Fey truth. I'm like, just so you know, I got the DVDs at 30 Rock.
Yeah, if you download the torrents, you can see
President
Jane
Faye
Krakowski.
Ain't all what she cracked up to be.
Truly, just like stand by it. It's more painful. That goes for you too, Zach Braff. Stand by your blackface. On Scrubs, because they just pulled those as well.
Oh, did they?
They did.
Yeah.
I didn't even know he did blackface on Scrubs. I've never seen Scrubs really, but okay. There we go.
It's just it's weird because it's like different time. It's like, that was like 2007 though.
Well, it was that like, you know, that like Michael Scott era of humor where it was basically, it was just sort of like, we can point out racism and that's the level of sort of wokeness that we'll engage in. We're like, we're not going to be like, that's funny because it's racist. We're like, that's funny because it's racist. That's gross, actually. And that's really awkward that that person would do something so racist. But then that's where it'll end, like the sort of examination of that behavior. And then it just kind of gets away.
Because
everyone's
like,
we know it's bad.
Fully, because the white liberals, there was just like a moment of time and culture that hopefully will pass where like their predominance in media, as long as they said, no, trust me, like I'm not racist and like I totally get it. Like that's how you get Sarah Silverman saying the N-word a bunch in her stand up and things like that, where it's like, this isn't quite, hopefully we're getting to the point where I don't think you can ironically emulate a thing without somewhat sincerely emulating the thing. At all? Right. And I'm sure you guys have talked about the Megan Amram tweets at this point as well.
We touched on them, I think, last week. But I mean, I think it was funny because I remember seeing her tweets from like a good place where she would put down all of her ideas for businesses like from a good place. And like whenever it was Asian restaurants, like the paragraph, it was like this thick of ideas. Italian restaurants were this, like she had a good mind for Asian puns, it seemed, at all times.
Yeah, very, very unfortunate.
Yeah, so we'll see what happens. Because I think, there's a lot of comedians out there, too, who, like, know her well. And they're like, I don't believe her to be, like, a nasty person. But I'm also going to say, I'll believe it when I see it, when I see the actual work being done, rather than, like, you know my heart.
Right.
You know where I'm coming from.
Right, but I think those people that would be more skeptical and try more holistically to hold a person like that to account will not be in a hiring-firing position over a person like that.
Yeah, for sure.
You know what I mean? Right. Like, it's not like Mike Schur's going to be like, this person I've worked with for 12 years. I don't think
right,
so. Like,
right.
He'll hire her for the next show. It like kind of, it materially doesn't really have a consequence, probably.
Yeah.
Whereas Kat Cohen, that has a consequence for sure. Unfortunately, or fortunately, depending.
We're going to get to know you a little bit better in a moment. First, we're going to tell our listeners a couple of the things we're talking about. We're going to talk about overt racism in the police who were fired and just the transcript of what they said on camera. We're also going to talk about the Linwood Vikings, which is something that was covered on Behind the Police, Robert Evans's and Propaganda's look back at the history of policing. Recent history of policing, there being a white supremacist gang operating out of the LA Sheriff's Office. Also, you know, we'll check in with that cop who had a tampon put in his Frappuccino to see where that investigation's at.
We'll talk about something
justice for the police officer,
racism.
I'm sure.
Right.
Finally.
We'll talk about Kristen Bell and Jenny Slate subbing themselves out of voicing persons of color on animated shows. And we'll check in with the Netflix top 10 and probably do a watch on one of the pieces of content that's trending right now. All of that, plenty more. But first, Kevin, we like to ask our guests, what is something from your search history that's revealing about who you are?
Well, one of the last things from my search history truly was Scrubs blackface that I saw. Because I was like, I think I saw every episode of that show. I have no memory of this. And
a bit with like Donald Faison or something?
Yeah, they were like switching places. So like Faison had white face on, I think.
What about white face?
Yeah, exactly. No,
what about
I can't,
white face?
I can't wait till we tackle that moment. What about white face?
Well, I mean, right now, if you saw like on Twitter, James Earl Jones was trending because people were like, this black guy was Anakin Skywalker, who is a white. So what's why is Jenny Slate? That's like the discourse I'm seeing on Twitter from nerds. But again, a lot of people are like, I'm sure Star Wars fans would love like the one speck of darkness, of blackness in that entire franchise, aside from Lando or something, to be, if that were like, yeah, it shouldn't have been James Earl Jones. Otherwise, it pretty would have been a fully, fully, fully white.
Yeah, that's a very bad faith argument. Although, canonically, I believe that Jabba the Hutt is Hispanic.
Okay.
All right.
Jabba Chamberlain. I think the other thing about James Earl Jones too is that he like didn't want to even be credited as it in the beginning. I feel like that was like one of those things where he felt it was sort of like, dude, I'm just voicing this other thing. I'm not in this movie. Don't worry about me.
Didn't he make some wild financial deal with the back end or something?
He must have. I mean, that's I think all the great people who are just like are gone because they're so rich had the like devil's deal of royalty points, like Keanu Reeves with The Matrix.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody who was involved in the original Star Wars was intensely embarrassed about it before it came out and became a monster hit.
Right.
And I think they were still embarrassed, but they were like, oh, I guess so. This is where we're at. But
right. It's one of those things where like they're mad at the people who like it. It's like, yo, this shit sucks, bro. What the fuck is wrong with y'all? You think this is good? Fuck. All right, I guess I'll.
Alec Guinness.
Yeah,
was
cut
like,
me another trillion-dollar check.
What the fuck is this? Harrison Ford was. I did not like the movie at all.
I could see all of them being that way. Maybe except for Hamill, always thought it was great because he was the star.
Right.
Of it. He could. He might be the one that's like
just like wide-eyed.
Against,
he's like,
yeah,
wow.
Out of lockstep of like. No, I think it's pretty good, actually. It's, like, fun.
And he's like, shut up, Mark.
He's not wrong. It is
There's
fun.
Power converters. It's wonderful.
Yeah, get the one out. You get fucking bent over at Tashi Station, you fucking creep.
What's something you think is underrated, Kevin?
That I think is underrated? Going on walks, man. I think going on a nice long walk, and this isn't even, like, pandemic and quarantine aside, one of my favorite pastimes was put on my Bose headphones and then just walking around the beautiful streets of Pasadena, California for hours to get my steps in, to burn some cows, and just to see my city.
Burn some cows, say hi to some pals. You know what I mean?
Burn cows and say hi to pals, which is what, you know, social distance walks are.
How long, what's like the duration of a typical Kevin T. Porter walk? A walkabout?
So the way my life is kind of structured right now, it is limited in the sense of I'll run in the morning.
Oh.
And then I will come back and then shower up, do some work, and then I'll take little walk breaks throughout the day where then I'll maybe go out for like 20 minutes at a time, come back, 20 minutes at a time, come back, or maybe like an hour at a time and come back. So like, anywhere between like 10 to 45 minutes, I think, is a great zone for me.
Oh, I like it's almost like rather than cigarette breaks, you're like, and I'll do a walk break.
Yeah, the opposite of what that does to your body.
Sounds very healthy.
Wait, you are smoking on these walks, right?
Yeah.
Fully, yeah. No, and I got one.
I don't understand.
I got one of those masks with the hole in it so you can keep smoking as you walk.
He's got one of those harmonica neck braces, but it's just filled with 15 cigarettes.
Oh, my God. I actually do have a harmonica neck brace, and now I really want to do that.
and take pictures of it. That's a great idea.
Hey, that's like album cover for your next album.
Yeah.
What's something you think is overrated?
Overrated. Okay. Now, I don't have a good argumentative foundation for this, but right now I'm going to say The Sopranos.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know if I agree with this, what I'm saying right now.
Oh, no.
But I'm just
Let's examine that.
No, this is who I am. But I'm starting to watch it for the first time because of the excess of free time that we all have now. And it feels like the golden age, like these are the greatest shows of all time from the golden age of television, like the turn of the 90s into the 2000s. It was The Wire, The Sopranos, Mad Men, and Breaking Bad. Like that was kind of the cultural critical consensus. I watched Breaking Bad in real time, loved it. Never watched The Wire. Watched a couple of seasons of Mad Men and bailed on it, but I want to start that up again. And then The Sopranos, I remember watching the pilot when I was like 13 years old, and then I just never picked it up again. So now I'm back in it, and I like it, and I think it's really enjoyable, but I don't know if it's like, this is clearly the great American novel of our time. And it is like strange.
No, The Wire is the great American novel.
Yeah, that's what people say too. And people say that about Mad Men. There's a bunch of novels on TV.
And The Sopranos kind of walks that weird line too, where you have deeply fucked up characters who are racist, homophobic, etc. But they're doing the thing where it's like, yeah, but we know these characters are bad. But for a certain group of people at the time, it's sort of it would be like, yeah, you can talk like, it's like fucking Sopranos talk when you fucking use like slurs and shit like that. But the elegance of the show, I think, is that despite that, they find these ways to use humor and like these weird quirks about these characters to suddenly get you to like give a shit about someone who's like a violent murderer or hitman or whatever. And those are the moments where I find most enjoyable, where I'm like, suddenly I'm laughing at someone I would normally think is just an absolute villain. But the writing, I think, is what makes it super fun too to watch.
Yeah. And it's funny too in this current moment to watch it and like alternating essentially a watching habit of like, okay, I'm going to watch 13th and just finish Selma. All right, here's two episodes of The Sopranos and then back to like Do the Right Thing. And it is, and even too, just like on a gender thing, like all four of those shows, or I don't know The Wire if it is as much, but all those are about difficult white men who are like actually bad and kind of anti-hero in nature. And so kind of, it's interesting to go back to that time when that felt like novelty. And like real original, and to try to get back into that mindset of like, oh yeah, like and trying to get back into that cultural mindset of it was never seen before in quite that same way, but now it kind of just feels like an exercise. But that's only because it was so influential that it did just like
set
the course
of
TV. Yeah, I mean, without the Sopranos, would we even have Ozark? And wouldn't that be a sad thing?
Is that good?
No, I mean, it's fine. It's fine.
I feel like, I don't know. Yeah, I feel like everybody was talking about it, but I guess that was because of quarantine. Like, every show that's coming out now is like, yes, get it out now.
Yeah, no, I think that's the case. Now, Ozark plays like a dumb guy is trying to write Breaking Bad.
Oh,
right. Yeah, okay. That's the vibe that I got.
But very incredibly watchable. Incredibly watchable. Great snack food TV.
It's amazing to look at the history of like mobsters and how influential shows like Godfather and Sopranos are. Godfather in particular, like invented a lot of the ideas of the American mafia, like having those higher level like family values. That was something that like didn't exist at all in the American mafia before the Godfather. And then everyone was like, oh, this is much cooler than what we do, which is go around like breaking parking meters to get the change out of it and you know, turning on each other.
Yeah, a little more barbaric.
And then Sopranos, I feel like, talked about that. Was like, aren't there scenes, Miles, in Sopranos where they talk about the Godfather and like how great it is? Yeah.
Yeah. And also, like, it's funny too, because, like, they'll harken back to, like, you know, back in the old guys, they would never do something like that. Like, you know, like, they, like, this sort of, like, reminisce. But then you're also thinking, like, are they talking about a period that predates even The Godfather coming out, and they're still using their Godfather-informed perception of these? Like, it's weird when, like, with what you're saying, to even look at those scenes when they're like going back into the 50s and 60s, and like what the Jersey mob looked like then.
Yeah, inventing traditions that don't exist. Also, as a Bruce Springsteen fan, very fun to watch Steven Van Zandt in his little toupee
that
doing
wig
Silvio
is doing work.
What a great actor for that show, though.
Yeah. Like, not little,
and his wife. His wife too, like it's just like the Van Zants as the Dante family, and I'm like, I love this, I love it.
Very strange. Although part of me wonders if like my full lack of love for the show comes from I feel like I might be a dum-dum with some mafia stuff. I don't know if I've ever really connected with like an organized crime or mafia movie. Even watching The Irishman, when they were like an hour or two of like, okay, the labor union wants this, I'm like, what do they control? Like, it feels like,
are they socialists?
Yeah, it feels Byzantine and political to me.
Did you watch Lillehammer, that show Steve Van Zandt was on after The Sopranos? Do you remember
a gangster in Norway?
Yeah.
No, I did not watch it. Although Bruce Springsteen does have a cameo in season three of that show.
The billboard alone, I was like, I can't do it. Like, you guys, this is too much. Don't drag me into this territory now. Like, let little Stevie from the E Street Band just be little Stevie.
Yeah. I think that's right. That was like Netflix's first show before House of Cards, by the way. People forget that.
Yeah.
We were like the company House of Cards built. It's like, no, dog, Lillehammer.
Yeah.
Built
off
that.
The back of Steve Van Zandt.
Yeah.
And that was when their model was invest in the fifth guy in Sopranos and see if he can carry a whole show because that show was popular. And then they went a little further.
Three seasons.
Yeah. Kevin, what is a myth? What's something people think is true you know to be false?
I thought about this a lot in thinking about myths in particular. One myth may be the existence of hell, and I'm here to say hell isn't real.
Thank you.
No.
That's a load off my shoulders.
Wait, Jack's pissed that hell isn't real? What's the
Catholic
matter?
He was raised Catholic, man. You're kind of disrupting a lot of teachings right now.
Yeah, there's something that I read at some point about how the existence of hell has like some connotation with like societies that, I don't know. It's like more impactful on the moral makeup of a society than you would think, like belief in hell.
Absolutely. Right. Yeah. I mean, it kind of gets into, I'm sure it's conversant with the conversations about prison reform stuff and like the idea of justice.
Oh,
yeah. And I'm sure it's got to influence so many things.
Oh,
the idea of like ultimate justice in a way.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Hell, huh? I mean, who's to say, you know, like when I was trippy and like reading books like in college, I was like, what if like this is hell right now? How do we know that? So like, fuck, bro, hand me that bong.
Yeah. No, well, okay, Miles kind of just stole my whole argument, so I guess I can't dispel the myth fully.
Jack, did you grow up fearing hell? Hellfire?
Yeah.
I did not really. When I was really young, I tried to like think of, I could never get my mind around the idea of eternity. Like, I just, it didn't seem possible to me. So then, like, I just couldn't do it. I, like, gave up when I was five.
Damn, gave up on hell at five?
I just gave up on, like, understanding it.
You hate to hear that, man.
I think I did. I think I did, though, because, like, my nightmares were always me doing bad things and, like, getting in trouble. Like, I used to have this recurring nightmare where someone would like force me to do drugs when I was like five or six or something.
Oh my god. Why? Yeah.
What happened?
I don't know, man. That's
they forced
that's
you to do
wait,
what,
bro.
What kind of drugs did they force you to do?
They would so I didn't know shit about drugs, so they would cut my thumb and then pour powder on the cut. And that was how they got me.
And then what would happen? Like your mom would be like, Jack, you're on drugs. Go to hell.
Exactly.
Oh my goodness gracious.
Well, and what was it like the drug free America? Like, how did you get that connotation with the drugs and everything?
Yeah, I think it must've been the PSAs. I mean, you know, I'm growing up in the Reagan era and like grow a lot of TV, a lot of like very special episodes of people, you know, doing drugs, having their life ruined by drugs. Right. Turns out drugs are awesome, and they're too good. They're not. Nobody's going to force you to pour them in your thumb cut, though. But yeah.
Now, we cut to 2 weeks from now when Daily Zeitgeist listeners, there's an epidemic of thumb-cutting powder putting into...
horrible infections.
Children are going to the ICU in record numbers from this podcast.
The least efficient way to do cocaine. Cut your thumb and then pour...
Terrible infection. Yeah.
Yeah.
That
doesn't
gangrene.
Even get into your system that way, I don't think.
I mean, I could absorb it, but then I feel like then it was just like necrotized from a terrible infection. Like, it's got necrotic, and I got a cool like purple thumb now.
Gracious.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think I had a fully realistic view of drug use when I was like 7 years old. But
ugh. Yeah, that's why you gotta get your kids started early, you know, so they don't have these weird dreams.
Show them the wire early on.
Show them how to break open a light bulb and get busy with it.
What the heck? Is that real?
Don't, Kevin, I can't corrupt you. That's a whole other
podcast.
Oh, my God.
I know. I do have a lack of knowledge with drugs that is comforting to me. Of like, you do what with the what? And there's a spoon? Oh, my God.
All right. Let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan. And if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island. And secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. 2 420-foot vertical speedways, 3 launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Roger that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 Gs in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
And we're back. So I wanted to talk about a couple just sort of staggering out in the open examples of racism from police. There is a cop who was caught on video just basically fantasizing about murdering black men, using the N-word constantly, saying, I can't wait. God, I can't wait for like basically a race war, talking about how he's arming himself up for it. And another police officer who he's talking to, who's on board for the most part. And these are words of a person who's legally like allowed to murder people. And they were, it was not like a young, long time officer. So the full conversation is definitely worth reading, because I think it makes it clear just like what we're up against. And I don't know how you read that and still feel comfortable with there being armed police in the United States.
The examples keep adding up, or the proof is becoming more available to people who really want to see like what the, you know, what the police force in this country has evolved into, and like what are the elements within it. In this bushel of apples, man, there's some bad ones, there's some white supremacist ones, there are guys who are horny for a race war, that the intent in their voices of like fantasizing about it is really just of someone who's like, I just need a reason, because that's really what it is. I'm ready to kill black people. Unfortunately, I need a reason to do it. So I will join and I will go to an occupation where there is a monopoly on violence, the police force, because we exclusively have the rights to violence. If you are violent at all, the police will come. Doesn't matter in what context, because violence is for the state and for the police to do on you. And you have people who are just saying, I just need a fucking reason. And they're walking around the streets, and even to like what, you know, countless people, not aside from like Danielle, who was talking about her own family, and other people I know who have parents in law enforcement and who have had to sever relationships in the last month because of they began to question what their parents were doing over the last few years. They're like, I've heard you say some really wild shit over the years. How could I ever know you've never done something fucked up out there, even if you didn't realize it? Even if you didn't realize it, but how do I know that? I was like, if you don't trust me, there's all kinds of stuff. And to know that this is out there is frightening. But again, this is a terror that has been known forever for certain people in this country. But yes, I hope every time we're hearing about this, whether it's even police in Milwaukee who are abdicating their responsibility to follow up on people saying children were abducted and the neighborhood is going on their own to find justice, that we can see that there are these issues that we have to correct. There's nothing is getting better. We're only, I think now people just are willing to see how bad it is. And now there's a taste of it. It tastes like shit.
Yeah.
I know people use the apple metaphor a lot, and bad apple, or like, oh, I mean, although the rest of that phrase is one bad apple ruins the bunch.
Yeah.
Which I think people realize. Also, I don't know if we've talked about the possibility that maybe just apples are bad for you. Maybe you shouldn't eat apples at all. And maybe apple as a food group is not something you need in your life.
But Adam and Eve and Johnny Appleseed. And
right. No, American an apple.
Wait, Adam and Eve?
Adam and Eve. So Eve took the apple and then created original sin in our fallen world that we live in. So
But iPhones, dude. iPhones. But case closed.
The iPhones, you know, that's part of the common grace that God has given us. But then in a way, an apple has ruined our lives forever. So abolish apples.
But, you know, like what happens after, right? Like, because Jack, you wrote this in there of, you know, these people have been operating above the law for a long time. And in the last month, the world is changing very quickly for these people who were able to murder and kill and maim undisturbed, are suddenly finding themselves in a world where people are paying a lot more attention, realizing not only are they overpaid, and bleeding budgets when they can go to people who actually need money. But there are also these reforms coming and these structural changes that essentially could put them out of the job. You know, like when you have these, you know, like in certain places that have completely revamped their police departments, it's like they fire everybody has to reapply. So I have a feeling there are cops out there who would, even if they reapply, they'd be like, look, we got to be real, man. Your record is fucked up. There's no fucking way you're gonna, like, that was back then, but this is the reason why we dismantled this department, is to make sure we know everybody who's in there. And unfortunately, you don't pass the test. What happens to these other officers afterwards who are just angry white people who are just used to killing black people undisturbed. What? And yeah, I guess that is their secondary fantasy, is to be like, well, then it's civil war, and then it's, there is no laws, and then that's how I can just act this out all the time.
Yeah. I mean, it's still, I'd say it's still preferable to, you know, fire them all, abolish the police. But when we do, a lot of them are going to turn into a very dangerous, like, you know, white supremacist terror organization. And we just need to, as a society, grapple with the fact that we don't take white supremacist domestic terrorism seriously. And it's going to be a problem for a long, long time. Still preferable because they won't legally be allowed to murder people. But I do think we need to be prepared that these are neo-Nazis and openly violent white supremacists. And I mean, so on Behind the Police, Robert Evans's miniseries that he's doing with Propaganda, they talk about an active white supremacist gang that was operating out of an LA sheriff's precinct. Like it was the LA sheriff's precinct. Called the Linwood Vikings. And when you go to the Wikipedia page, it's all like wanton racist hate crimes, and it just ends. It's never like dealt with. It's never like, and then they were like rooted out. There's a suit that requires the LA Sheriff's Department to pay $9 million in damages. And one of the guys they framed for murder gets out of prison after decades of being spent there, but they're still out there, and this is like not that far from where Robert Fuller was hanged. So it's just, I don't know, man. There's a woman in Wisconsin who was attacked with lighter fluid by four frat boys, sustained second and third degree burns, and the media is just kind of not really covering it.
Again, because since the beginning of all of these uprisings and protests, I've been saying, these systems respond every time to something, right? It's just like a living organism. If it feels that it is in threat, it will have to defend itself. So the police are on the back foot the first couple months. Now they're really out here with their full blown, like, we're victims. We're going to brutalize people on camera. Like, another cop is going to remind me I'm doing illegal chokes on black people on camera. There's a lot where you're seeing this, you know, like, just in the moment where a lot of people, I think, felt good of like, okay, we're on the verge of reform. You also see where the media comes into your point and sort of isn't allowing this to be part of the main discussion anymore, of being like, yeah, let's keep stoking this flame of being like, we need to actually reform the police. And we are just seeing this, the backlash. I just feel like in every single thing, like whether it's policing, or it's even performers not doing the voices of black characters, there's going to be the response where the racists have to come out and show themselves, because that's just what it is. So if it's the, you know, Jenny Slate thing, then people are like, well, what about James Earl Jones? Like, that's just the nature. Like, there's always going to be a response from people of this other side, of this ideology. And I think that's what we have to keep looking at, is every time ground is made or improvements are made, there will always be a push back from these systems, whether that's white supremacy or what have you. But this is going to be constant. I think being reminded of that fact will help people stay focused on this, because again, you know, the media really, they really don't give a fuck as much now, unless things are burning down. There isn't much room for that, because we're completely on like Bill Barr, huh? Like he's a crime, huh? He's a creep.
Yeah, I think the last month is the first time that I have aligned in conservative family's disdain for like mainstream media stuff. So before, mainstream media was like, oh, they're fear-mongering about COVID-19. It's actually just a flu. It's not bad, blah, blah, blah. Or like the mainstream media won't tell you about this, # plandemic. And then the idea of like the way that the mainstream media did cover BLM protests and the movement, especially the first couple of weeks, in all the like couch fainting and pearl clutching about the looters and all this, and like how they frame things and what they put their focus and attention on. Mm-hmm. That was the first time that social media did feel like a net positive for the world, in the sense of like distribution and visibility.
Yeah,
which is like
in history.
Truly, like it may have been one of the only, and I'm sure there's like been plenty of social uprisings where social media has been like a like an important component of it. But with the BLM stuff, it just felt like unimpeachable, like putting together like these montages of LAPD brutalizing the police over a video of Eric Garcetti being like, "I love you, son," to Chief Moore and things yeah. like that. It just felt unimpeachable. So I think it's sad that civilians have to be held to a higher standard
yeah.
with this stuff in terms of vigilance than elected in officials and civil servants, but and that's the way it is.
The people who run these, you know, news organizations are white liberals typically. And yeah. it's exactly what like Martin Luther King was talking about. Like well-intentioned white liberals, like beware, because that's not how we get to real justice. Because it's you can tell just how the news operates. Like even the people who run the newsrooms have a certain threshold for how much discomfort they're willing to even have go through their airwaves mm-hmm. of like, I don't know, it's should we really keep talking about like this colonizer stuff? Like it's kind of getting heavy. I don't know. Like, should we just talk? Like, you go to MSNBC right now. There isn't a single headline having to do with anything that was related to the uprisings and protests that have been going on. It's about, you know, Biden having a lead, you know, what's going on with COVID-19. Trump has bad polls. There's nothing about Breonna Taylor's, you know, murderers still being out there, only getting fired. What's happening in other cities? You know, I just barely saw something about Elijah McClain, how the governor is asking that case be actually investigated now. But this is how because a lot of people, they really think the media is the fucking world. And unfortunately, when they fall into that, they will look at this and go, okay, I think racism's been solved. But we're still out here saying like, oh my God, but this is how it works. They can't really shine the light on themselves right now. They're just incapable. Mm-hmm. And that's why like the lack of diversity, inclusion, especially when you look at the media, like this is the kind of thing you get.
Yeah. I mean that there's a guy, John Rice, who has written in The Atlantic and talked on a New York Magazine's podcast about what he calls third degree racism. And he kind of describes it as it's like the most omnipresent type of discrimination. It kind of undergirds every part of American companies, basically, like white owned and run companies. And it's third degree in that it's like not intentional, it's passive and maybe less acutely damaging than the stuff we were just talking about, but its omnipresence makes it as damaging on the whole. I'll just read like what he wrote in his article in The Atlantic. He said, employers whose efforts to increase diversity lack the same analytical and executional rigor that is taken for granted in every other part of their business engage in practices that disadvantage Black people in the competition for economic opportunity. Like it needs to be a goal that you're tracking with metrics. It needs to be like you would any other part of your business that you want to succeed in. It can't just be a thing that you make a gesture at every once in a while when people are looking.
Yeah, but that's all people, a lot of people just know how to do. And they aren't right. around enough people to tell them that's bullshit. That's not change at all. That's you. That's like you just being like, oh, sorry, sorry, sorry. That's the equivalent right. of like just being like, oh, sorry. That's it. That's all you did was apologize. Because if you're really, you know, if you're really looking at this as an issue, then then think about it. To your point, Jack, like if you're going to use analytics and figure out how you're going to boost your profit margins or whatever business goal you have, you're going to do that more than just being like, yeah, we need more of that. So just do that. And I'll talk to you at the end of the quarter. Like you got to have a strategy. It's the same thing with dismantling systemic racism. You have to have a strategy. You have to have a way of looking at it and quantifying it. Because I think the thing that people do is be very disingenuous and act like it isn't a measurable thing. Like even mm-hmm. though there's so much data to say these cities are segregated like this, there is your data right there. There's so much that you can look at to help inform your decision making and say, oh, wow, like it's not just that I have to hire people. It's like that I have to make my company a place that allows Black people and a diverse group of people a pathway into stable income to, you know, generate wealth. Because that's unfortunately, the name of the game here is like you have to be in here and then you have to buy real estate because that's just the American cycle and a lot of places, too. But that if you're not thinking like that, then, yeah, you're going to get all this bullshit, these empty gestures that ring hollow, like after you get the boner off from the press release. And then you're like, oh, yeah.
Right.
And yeah, then you're back to regular scheduled program.
It feels like it, most of the time that stuff has the social efficacy of like deleting old tweets.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than, okay, well, what's the thing moving forward? What's the commitment? What's the change? Where's the money going? What's the practice now? I don't even know if you guys at all followed the Ringer stuff or the Bill Simmons stuff this past week.
I have it in here, actually.
Oh, is that true? Oh, gracious.
Yeah, because, well, he specifically addresses one of the things that Bill Simmons raises, the whole pipeline thing. He's like, well, you know, that we didn't have the ability to hire a more diverse staff because we were like, didn't have the money and there wasn't, you know, we were just still starting out. And it's like,
wait, you didn't have the money to what? Underpay people of color like you normally do? Right. Like, what the fuck is that mean?
He said when executives use that excuse that there's like a small pipeline of talent, he asks them, oh yeah, how many black people did you have at your wedding? Because
that were not in the band?
Right, exactly. Woo! And that is, yeah, his point is that like a lot of the time people are hiring from like their pool of social connections. And they're not doing it because they're thinking out loud, I want to gatekeep. They're doing it because it's the easy thing to do. It's easier to vet people who, you know somebody who is at your wedding, and it's self-perpetuating. The Simmons thing was interesting. Kevin, I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
And as someone who is like really, I love a lot of the Ringer content stuff. I listen to some of those shows regularly. And probably read the website regularly, but very disappointing stuff. I mean, Bill Simmons has been kind of showing his ass the last month as far as like the conversation goes, even in his first podcast back with Ryan Russillo from the protest, where they were just like very flippant and really insensitive about just like looter bullshit and stuff like that. But, the thing from the New York Times piece that was really offensive that people rightfully kind of zeroed in on as the language that said so much was talking about like even in the sense of their podcast, where like on some of those shows they would have on more guests of color or more different kinds of people, and then over time it just, like for their Rewatchables podcast, it just became the same three guys who are, you know, senior staff at the website, and they're white males. And the thing Bill Simmons said was, this is an open mic night. As far as proven talent and stuff, which just like, I feel like even that, like that is the stuff that we have to be so vigilant in identifying and understanding the kind of like thought processes that lead to that moment. By the way, it is an open mic night. Bill Simmons did give his 14-year-old daughter a podcast on the network. Yeah. So it's like,
the fuck up.
I guess it's not open mic night because comedians do those generally, not just like guys, you know.
I think, especially like in a lot of industries. I mean, I can only speak from entertainment comedy myself, but I've only been able to move up because of my proximity to whiteness. I've never had a black person give me a job, ever, in entertainment, ever. I've only had the job because I knew white people who were vacating that position, who used to work there, who I worked with previously and are now in a position to hire. But that's the game a lot for a lot of non-white people to get into industries that are so homogeneous like this. It's very like there's no way to do it, because it's not like you're gonna go on Craigslist and see an ad to be a writer's assistant for the next NBC show. That's just not how it works. Right. Like you have to know somebody who knows somebody who knows somebody. And if you're already like trying to enter a very white scene and you are not white, there's like extra work you gotta do. Like you're gonna have to figure out who these people are that are worth knowing and that can offer you opportunity, because at the end of the day, it comes very differently than a lot of people who I just see like, oh shit, like wow, how'd you get that job? Like I didn't even know they were hiring. And they're like, oh yeah, like my friend's ex like used to run that thing and now he's at UTA, but he knows my cousin. And then so he just had me come through and like, yeah, like I was doing some shit like at my last game. I was like, what the fuck? Like, that's how y'all get jobs?
It almost feels like that's like a more sinister microcosm of what you see happening with like film industry stuff, where it's so prevalent right now to make stuff based on pre-existing IP.
Yeah.
Because it's like, oh, it's a known quantity and it's a safe bet. So, okay, we're going to do a live action remake of Little Mermaid or whatever they're doing.
Yeah.
And so that being like a broader, less harmful example of the more micro stuff that is fear-based decision-making.
Which is the worst kind.
Yeah, which is like trusted, like, okay, well, I know Steven and I grew up across the street from him. I think he can hold it down, I guess.
But it's like he doesn't have an original thought in his body and he can only speak in quotes from the movie Old School.
Oh my God.
And you're like, you're running this whole what the fuck?
But not that's even how that brothers, but Old School.
Yeah, right. I mean, like, but you know, very specific time. But you know, that's the game. And I think that's why people need to look, you know, like these jobs and stuff are like, I think white people don't realize it's like a ball that like this employment is like a ball y'all got and you pass it around to people that you already have been making eye contact with. So the ball only gets passed around to people you already know. And then there are people trying to get in the game and like, how the fuck do I catch this ball? I'm like, okay, so I'm going to need to get near this person who is in the game. They will know who I am. And then now they know who I am, and there's a chance the ball could come my way. And the problem is, like you're saying, Kevin, it's all fear-based, because if they just took, what's odd is like to someone who's hiring someone, it's like, it's a risk to, you know, maybe go out there and someone you don't know. But you know what? The chances of you finding someone really good are much higher than just settling on someone you don't have to worry about. And it's the same thing with the ideas. The movies suck. Because it's ideas like from the business standpoint of the film industry, they don't have to worry about. It's not like a risk. But all this shit is like not entertaining anymore. And now we're like, fuck you, bro. We'll just watch Korean movies then. Like at least they're doing some shit. Like, and not just like rinsing and repeating stuff. It's like, and they're not even seeing the benefit of being like, dude, do something different. Like it will naturally energize things. You know, it will be stagnant if you just continue to stay in your comfort zone. I mean, and that's beyond just your business practices. It's just a way of living too. You know, you need to go outside of what you know to truly begin to like build your world of experience and try and see things differently. Otherwise, yeah, you're just playing yourself because you're looking at the same fucking stucco wall all day and being like, yep, that's the world.
Yeah. And it kind of makes everyone a victim of that stuff too.
Yeah.
Because in a way, like white people become like not as much of a victim, but a victim of it by their own like, almost being like trapped in this morass of mediocrity by not ever wanting to get out of that zone. Yeah. And I think especially in creative environments, decision makers rob themselves of a lot of excellence and potential from that stuff.
When you miss out on people like that who aren't part of the normal, you know, like comedy guy circle where like I feel like that's every like most writers' rooms. Mm-hmm. And then just take the chance. Something new will happen, which will already be energizing. And if you're hiring, then like, you know, I don't know. It just seems so easy. But again, we're running these examples where companies are like, and we're going to do the right thing now. And it's like, that could have been done so long ago. And it really wasn't that hard, aside from the fact that you just agreed now that it's bad.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I mean, they're choosing third degree racism over, you know, actual like success. They have to, because it will make your company better. Studies have found that people who are with people like themselves in a group like problem solving setting have a higher degree of confidence in, you know, the answer they come to or the solution they come to, and a lower level of success. And I think that's like, just keep that in mind. It's going to be comfortable and more mediocre if you are just like working with and hiring people who are like yourself. It's just going to be, you guys are going to be like, yeah, yeah, totally. This is, we nailed it. And you're going to be wrong.
Right.
All right. Let's take a quick break and we'll be right back.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring the Kardashians, of course. And season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan. And if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island. And secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
And we're back. Real quick, I don't think we got a chance to talk about they looked at the security tape. They checked the receipts on that cop who said there was a tampon placed in his Frappuccino.
Uh-huh.
And nothing didn't happen. So it seems like the police are really out of touch with the wonders of video. Like,
You're fucking kidding me. That was not real. I thought the tampon bay fuckineer with his Flopuccino was the real story. And that's not.
I know.
Oh, God. Then who? So are people being mean to cops? I don't get it.
It's all these stories are so incredible because it is watching law enforcement officials essentially write fanfic of their own persecution in real time.
Yeah.
Is an incredible exercise to see. Okay, what would be the most egregious? Well, I guess a tampon. What would a guy like me get at a... I guess I would get a Frappuccino at one of these places. And like just kind of the A to B to C. And you know, historically, Starbucks has, lest we forget, has perpetuated a lot of fake anti-police violence when the young lady wrote pig on the guy's cup.
Yeah, that he wrote on his own cup.
Exactly. A couple months ago.
Self-harm. That's all they know is this self-harm. They're truly just a vile group. You know what I mean? Like,
and then when you look broadly at the conservative movement against Starbucks killing Christmas with their like not putting crosses on their Christmas cups, it's like a lesser version of that, but it's still the same sort of idea that like you can get everybody outraged by claiming Starbucks is attacking you.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've seen...
have like the morals to actually follow through on any of like their supposed boycotts or anything. Because at the end of the day, their brains are fully fucked off consumer culture. Like, there's no way that they're like, yeah, you know what? I've really thought about my place in this consumer cycle, and actually giving my money to Starbucks isn't what I want. Aside from them destroying Christmas, I just think as an enterprise, it's probably not a good idea for me to participate. It's not. That's not what it is. It's just pump faking. That's all these people do. It's just a pump fake. I won't go. Okay, then don't. Fuck you. We're doing the same thing. And watch, they still go, and they shut the fuck up, and now they're just like, well, then I'll write pig on my own cup. Like, okay, idiot, you're still here, and you gave them your money, you fucking dummy.
Now, we're getting this news in just now, but from the at Starbucks official account, they've announced that the new holiday cups will be cops on their cups. They're going to put cops in Santa outfits on their holiday cups, making everybody happy.
Oh, man, just saying po-po-po down the fucking chimney.
Let's talk about Kristen Bell and Jenny Slate. They have subbed themselves out as performers because they were voicing persons of color on Big Mouth and Central Park, respectively. Yeah. So,
I mean, great, great. Hey, make space. That's great. They took a second. Their statements were like, yeah, when I just, you know, the last month, just trying to think of how I may have participated in any kind of racism or kept people out of a job or something, I realize I'm playing a half black character, and yes, the character is half white and I am white, and then that could be my half, and then that's why it's okay, is what I told myself. But then I realized it was black erasure, and I was also taking up the spot for someone else who could be having a nice income as a voiceover actor, because Jenny Slate and Kristen Bell are not struggling at all. They are, I know Kristen Bell is a very kind landlord. So I have a feeling they, you know, they're doing the right thing, because that's precisely, they're looking at it and making that decision. But this is like the easy stuff too. It's almost like, yeah, you could, these, you know, people of color can also do voice acting. And there was a few articles showing how there are a few like white voice actors who are voicing characters who are not white. And just sort of like, yeah, this is like a thing that we can also talk about. But then it kicks off the whole fucking Darth Vader discussion with people on the right.
The recency of these voices too is what makes it so funny. Mm-hmm. I feel like Kristen Bell with the, you know, everyone's purple or whatever that kid's book she put out a couple weeks ago. I think we're getting more of a clear sense of where her and Dax might fall on certain
things. I don't see color.
Yeah. But that Central Park came out like 2 weeks ago. It's not like, it's surely not like, you know,
for the first thing.
Yes. Yeah. Like, it's not like even in Scrubs or 30 Rock, where it's like, it was 15 years ago and blah, blah, blah. But it's like Central Park came out on Apple TV Plus 2 weeks ago. And they're like, oh, you know, upon further inspection. The thing with both of those cases is I feel like the instant Hank Azaria says, you know what, I'm not doing a poo anymore, that I feel like just should be, that's it. Like, it's game over for, is this right or like, I don't know. And it's a complicated question. It's like Hank Azaria, who got grandfathered in from a much more racist time and probably a much more racist writing staff. He's saying no to it in response to like legitimate criticism. So why would it ever be okay?
No, wait, Azaria said he's done. In February, he said he was done doing a poo.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Oh, you're saying if okay, got it. I'm confused.
Once he says he's done, like everybody else should have taken the
cue. Everyone else should have, like that should have been a wave. It should have been like, there should have been a cascade of press releases of like, oh shit, Azaria's not doing it.
That's like that example everyone has in the back of their mind. They're like, well, you know, Hank Azaria does that poo. So like, if it's not hot for him,
exactly.
I guess I can get away with this shit.
It's the example that gives permission. And even on a woke as hell show like BoJack Horseman, where Alison Brie is playing an Asian character, like it's just... Everyone's given each other permission in these teeny tiny little ways.
Right.
Guys, let's check in with the Netflix top 10 real quick.
Yeah.
Altered Carbon season 2. I hope it's still up there.
So we skipped last week and the Netflix top 10 went wild in the meantime. We've got some new entries. So 365 Days still there, still in the top 4. For most of last week, I noticed it was at number one. So America stays horny, to the point that number 6 is that, the full porno that Carl and I were talking about. That's like, I don't know, it's actual people having actual sex on camera, but it's wrapped in like a moody European film. It's from the guy who made Enter the Void. It's okay. But so that broke into the top 10. Let's see. The Floor is Lava. What do we know about The Floor is Lava other than...
I know a friend of mine is on episode 9, and I did enjoy watching her cross.
Oh, it's a fucking obstacle course floor. Show. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. I mean, I like kind of respect obstacle course shows. You know, shout out to Japanese culture. You know, yeah. We see you stealing the culture. But yeah, the thing that Jamie tweeted yesterday about Nut Job, at the time of her tweet, it was number 4. And she was like, America, let's unpack this. because, yeah, I wonder, I know Nut Job is going to be some kind of just absolutely bizarro, tone deaf animated thing. We've already seen the soft porn.
Yeah,
of it's 365.
2014 3D computer animated heist comedy where they're stealing, it's I think squirrels stealing nuts.
Oh,
that's awesome.
Will Arnett, Brendan Fraser, and Gabriel Iglesias, Fluffy himself.
Mm. That's okay. Awesome. Oh my God. I can't wait.
I don't know. We haven't done, I mean, Floor is Lava is like definitely departure from scripted things we have been assessing. But will we have
number
much
one
commentary?
And it's been number one. All
right,
all
then
week.
Yeah, maybe that. I think then maybe we just need to understand why. Because when 365 Denis was number one, we had to go boldly into that soft core. So
yeah,
so this one.
I've managed to avoid all
Lost
of these.
Bullet.
Oh,
Lost Bullet is basically French Fast and Furious. You should definitely watch 365 Days. It's a cinematic achievement,
it's
Kevin.
It's so. fucking off the rails with its like lack of acknowledging consent and like what it means to be in a relationship or what love is. Like so many times you're like, oh my God, he like grabbed this woman by her neck and then like made out with her and she's like, all right, I'll stay. You're right. Hmm. You're like, what?
Made out with her with his wiener.
Yeah. Oh, well, not the, well, I mean, that's you're talking about off the rip, the 10,000 foot altitude fellatio scene. There's a lot of there's a lot of head in that movie. A lot of head.
Yeah.
Well, a friend of mine asked me to watch it in live texter while I was doing it, so maybe I'll do that tomorrow night.
Oh yeah, I can only imagine. I was constantly like about to pass out cuz I could not believe that this was a thing that many Americans were like, yeah, mhm, mhm. Pretty cool. Huh.
Okay. Did you name that Jeff Dunham is one of the voices in The Nut Job?
No, he's not.
Lena's brother?
Yes, he is.
Oh, I love
it. Yeah, we never talk about that nepotistic ride she took, huh, to the top.
I know. She, you know, her fortune is built on puppet culture.
Yeah, racist puppet culture.
But her whole career was her showing up at parties with like New York Times writers and being adorable when she was like 7 years old because her parents were like society people.
Well, yeah, and then you're like, hi, David Mamet's daughter, be in my thing too, so nobody will ever be able to say no to this show.
And then, hello, Brian Williams' daughter, come be in my
right.
show. This is a bunch of, they should have called it, instead of girls, they should have called it daughters. Because right. they're all someone's daughters.
That's the thing that we were talking about the other day, of just, again, how like the industry works, like even in LA. All the celebrity kids, producer kids, exec kids, they go to one of three high schools. And then all the films end up coming out of alumni of these schools. And you're like, I'm always like, okay, where'd you go to Harvard, Westlake, or Crossroads?
Time to abolish high school.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Home, yeah, just PC learning. Just fire up the,
I was homeschooled. I turned out great.
Fantastic.
The Nut Job, I mean, maybe I have to watch The Nut Job because as I was watching the preview, I was also, hanging out with my sons and they were laughing uproariously. I just don't know. Is it too... Do I want to expose them to this? I feel like it's probably not good. I've already polluted their brains with Trolls World Tour.
You do the woke dad thing, like where you're watching the problematic movie and you pause it and you're like, let me explain what's happening here, son. Right. What they're trying to tell you, what they're trying to indoctrinate you with. Okay.
Oh man.
Yeah.
Because this is already trying to put you on the rat race where you're trying to attain, in this case, acorns, but we call them dollars out here. Because we are living in a system, and then they're like, they just start crying because they want to watch the cartoon.
See, this is why I can never have children, because I don't want to do John Oliver explainers every 2 minutes if we put on Animaniacs.
Welcome, welcome, welcome!
And if you think Wacko's accent is inappropriate, it's because it is.
It's because it is.
You guys have a really good John Oliver.
I can only do welcome, welcome, welcome.
Well,
fuck you, Helen. You knew I wasn't going to be in the break room.
Does anyone have a John Oliver, like, non sequiturs Twitter account that are just like, just out of context lines that you would believe and be like, yeah, and fuck you, Helen. I'm not coming to the break room to sing.
No, that'd be cool, though. Oh, we love Zazu. We stan.
Yeah. Oh wait, before we get there, do we decide it's Nut Job or Floor is Lava? Nut Job?
Oh shit. I'm gonna watch the Nut Job. You're gonna watch the Floor is Lava. Does that sound good?
I go ahead, because I actually, every time you watch a kid's movie for this, you come back with like a fucking you look so deep into the matrix of the film, I get like stressed out when I'm like, I'm an idiot, because this guy's like, yeah, I mean, I don't know what they're actually trying to say about this genre of music and trolls. And I was like, okay, yeah, this is good. Have this guy on the kid movie.
I would recommend Floor is Lava. I enjoyed what I watched.
All right, I'm going to, all right, so Floor is Lava and Nut Job, do you, listeners, whatever you want to land on for Monday.
Kevin, it's been a pleasure having you. Where can people find you, follow you, enjoy you?
You can follow me at Kevin T. Porter everywhere. You can listen to my podcasts, Inside Voices or Good Christian Fun, wherever you get your pods. And then, you know, peep me on Letterboxd. We're all on Letterboxd now, right? Mm-hmm. Reviewing our movies, showing our histories.
Yeah.
Making our lists. What a fun time.
And is there a tweet or some other work of social media you've been enjoying?
Oh, you know what? In preparation for this, I did find a tweet that allowed from at Otto, O-T-T-O, Fernandez. He tweeted, I'm not B-I-P-O-C, I'm O-J. I thought it was a pretty terrific tweet.
Miles, where can people find you and follow you, and what's the tweet you've been enjoying?
Twitter, Instagram, Miles of Gray. Also my other podcast, 420 Day Fiance. If you like 90 Day Fiance, hop in. It's a ride.
Get in.
It is a ride. Okay, let's see. A tweet that I like. This one is from at We Amor Amara. It says, are there any black owned planets I can move to? and what else is there? Another one is from at Ben Meckler. It says, is it all millennials that can attach every formative sexual experience in their life to a DVD menu that was playing on repeat in the background, or are we a micro generation?
Some tweets I've been enjoying. At Speechlyish tweeted, writing about U.S. food the way the New York Times covers Asian fruit. In a nation torn by racial conflict, one unlikely food unites. To those accustomed to chopsticks, the greasy parcel known as a burger, a sort of split bow, is crude and messy, yet it encapsulates a nation's violent past. Which I thought was perfect. And then Dan Johnson tweeted, hi, welcome to Chuck E. Cheese. Everything is visibly dirty and our mascot is a rat. Eat some pizza near a sneezing child. Come on down for some rat pizza at our child casino. You can find me on Twitter at Jack_O'Brien. You can find us on Twitter at Daily Zeitgeist. We're at The Daily Zeitgeist on Instagram. We have a Facebook fan page and a website, dailyzeitgeist.com, where we post our episodes and our footnotes. Where we link off to the information that we talked about in today's episode, as well as the song we ride out on, Miles. What's that going to be today?
This is a track from a group called Dumbo Gets Mad, and they are a very interesting group. This is the first time I heard of this group. It's like an Italian band, but they started playing around L.A. a couple years ago, and they have a very like psychedelic, psych pop, disco feel, and like they kind of record the tape, so it feels almost like very old school, but the rhythms are good. Like this one has a very great samba beat to it, and it's called Makes You Fly. So this is just a great one to take into the weekend. Oh, one other thing I do want to say, this weekend, if you are interested in really fantastic visual art, I have to recommend, there is a 48-hour stream of this piece by this artist, Arthur Jaffa. It's called Love is the Message. The Message is Death. And he's a really amazing artist. It's like this, it's a thing you could only watch in museums prior to, you know, the last month with everything going on. And it's this, you know, it's a lot of found and original footage that is described as, you know, the, it's exploring the Black American experience. And it's a very, very powerful piece. And it's like streaming anywhere. A few like different museums are streaming this just for this weekend. And he's an incredible artist from Tupelo, Mississippi. But search for Arthur Jaffa's Love is the Message, The Message is Death. It's a very, very powerful piece that is absolutely recommended viewing if you are so inclined to engage with material like that. And I hope you are.
How long is it?
It's not that long. It's not like a full on. Yeah, it's a shorter piece. It's definitely not like an hour or anything like that.
Got it. I thought you said it was 48 hours long.
Oh no, they're playing it for 48 hours. It's being streamed for 48 hours this weekend from today, Friday, up until Sunday.
More manageable.
Yeah.
All right. Well, the Daily Zeitgeist is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. That's gonna do it for this morning. We'll be back this afternoon to tell you what's trending. Talk to you then. Bye.
Bye. Right, gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama, a new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. Two 420-foot vertical speedways, three launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Roger that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 Gs in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch stratacoaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.